Robert Rodriguez made his name as a filmmaker with a string of movies so violent that one of them was banned by censors in Ireland. Who could have predicted that the man behind the action pictures El Mariachi, Desperado, and the mock horror films From Dusk Till Dawn and The Faculty would be where he is now, the writer, director, and producer of the gentle, imaginative Spy Kids movies? But Rodriguez's career doesn't follow any of the usual Hollywood rules. He financed his first film, El Mariachi, with $7,000, mainly earned by hiring himself out as a subject for medical experiments, and he made the Spy Kids movies from his home studio in Austin, Texas. I spoke with Rodriguez last summer about his latest film, the sequel, Spy Kids 2, which has just come out on DVD. In the Spy Kids films, the Spy Kids discover that their square parents are really ultra-hip secret agents. The kids then become small super spies themselves. In this scene from Spy Kids 2, they're being briefed on their new spy gadgets by Machete, their uncle, played by Danny Trejo.
I brought you all new gadgets.
Check it out, the very latest spy watch. Cell phone, internet access, satellite TV, you name it. That baby will do everything but tell you what time it is.
It doesn't tell time?
There was no more room for the clock.
Are you sure these are new? We can't be running around with outdated equipment.
I'm going to give you the one gadget you should always carry.
A rubber band?
It's a Machete Elastic Wonder.
It's a rubber band.
Yeah, but it's also the world's greatest gadget. 999 uses.
Use number one, a stylish bracelet. Use number two. Ah!
Robert Rodriguez, welcome back to Fresh Air.
It's great to be back after, I think, 10 years.
You know, Spy Kids, too, has the greatest gadgets in it. There's a little personal robot that looks like a cootie bug and a huge magnetic aircraft which sucks up bad guys. And I like that all-purpose silver ponytail holder. And it seemed to be kind of a metaphor for your approach to a somewhat big-budget film with a lot of special effects that, in the end, nothing beats the simplest solutions.
The simplest solutions and just sort of the low-tech in a high-tech world solutions, you know, always having to be resourceful, and creativity and imagination is always more important than technology and technique. I wanted to use those two metaphors, and really your methodology ends up becoming part of the thematic material. I really like using lower budgets, and instead of having money to solve creative problems on the set, you just use your creativity. And that's what makes the movie so much more creative and more fun, and it was really essential for a movie like Spy Kids to feel more creative, like a finger painting, than just big and expensive, like a big movie usually does.
Now, that must have also contributed to the plot line that the spy kids land on an island where no gadgets work. Even though they have the newest and the latest and the best gadgets of all, they have to end up using their heads to solve the case. And it impressed me as a comment on kids and gear and labels and how technology-dependent kids are.
Yes, adults as well, but yeah, especially kids. My children, as young as they are, I have little boys under the age of 6, and they're so technologically savvy. And I live a little ways out of Austin to where even if a small storm comes by, all our power goes out for at least a day. And it always shocks all of us how technologically dependent we are. So I really wanted to play with the idea of loading the kids up with all the latest, coolest gadgets, and then stripping that away from them midway through the movie, where they have to go on a mission where they have to use their heads, and they've already forgotten how to do that. They don't even know how to tie their shoes anymore, because it used to be automatic.
Well, there are a ton of visual effects in this movie. In both the Spy
Kids
movies. Over a thousand. How does that compare to other
thousand.
to other big budget movies like this, say Inspector Gadget or some of the others?
I don't know how many are in that, but our movies cost a fraction of the cost of, say, like a Stuart Little, which I don't really know the true budget, but what I've heard is it's like $120 million. This one costs $38 because I make it at home. I do a lot of the jobs myself. Our crew is all that way also. And we just use creativity instead of, I get to make my own budgets, and the studio always wants to give me more. It's always the reverse. The studio says, are you sure you don't want more money? We'll give you $60 million. The money's not going to make it good. The money's not going to make it better or more creative. And the more you're limited by money and by resources, the more you're forced to be more creative. So I don't know if you've seen the movie, but one of the favorite scenes is when two kids walk into a room where they can't hear each other talk, but they can hear each other think. And the audience, you hear the audience, they're so surprised by the idea, and they laugh. That idea cost $5 because it doesn't require anything but the idea. And when you don't have the money, you're forced to come up with things that, you know, instead of thinking, how am I going to spend $100 million today? You think, How am I going to make this movie good and interesting and fun for people? And your thinking goes to a different area, and it's so fun to try to, you know, solve these challenges creatively.
So do you just sit at your computer and think up some of these creative solutions, or do you do something or go somewhere to get your head in that right place to take you back to that kind of kid wacky creativity?
This is the trick. I turned into Night Guy because I found, you know, and this happens to everybody, the way the workday works, it's really anti-family because you're really just starting to get cooking at your job, whatever it is, near the end of the day. And if you stay late at work, wow, the kids are already asleep and they've already had dinner and you've missed it. I switched my schedule around completely and it works so much better. If you can be a night person, you should try this. It's really fun. What I do is I make breakfast for the kids because I love to cook. They go to school, I go to sleep. I wake up, I go pick them up from school, we play for a little while, maybe we'll go swimming, I'll work a little bit in the garage. I do everything at home, the editing, the sound mix, everything I do in my garage. And then I'll cook dinner for them, they go to sleep, and then while they're asleep, I work all night. And because I'm working all night, no one calls because everyone else is gone from the office. So you have so much time to just concentrate on the work you're doing and be creative, and you're really more creative at night. I think that's why musicians and other artists are night people, because the world goes to sleep and your mind is also in a semi-dream state, and you really can come up with things that you wouldn't normally think of while you're being distracted during the day. And one full night of work equals at least five working regular days, and you get so much done in a short amount of time. That's the trick.
The screen technically jumps out at you in Spy Kids, in Spy Kids 2 especially. It really pops. And I know that you're using this new technology, high-definition digital cameras, to film the movie. They were customized for the shoot. How so?
Well, these cameras are so incredible. You can go customize them yourself and give it their own look. And I have to say something real quick because people get confused. It's such a new medium that everything is called digital, whether it's mini DV that you shoot at home or high def, and there's a big difference. It's almost like there's so many different types of film. There's Super 8, there's 16, there's 35, there's 70 millimeter. The video you have at home, the little mini DV, that's kind of like Super 8. This HD is more like 70 millimeter. I mean, it looks amazing. It looks better than traditional film. It's much more colorful. It feels a lot more like the old Technicolor movies I grew up watching. And I really wanted that back. I was really disappointed how Spy Kids looked on film because I was there on the sets, and the sets were so vibrant and so colorful, but it doesn't translate to film. Film isn't as good as it used to be, and it just keeps getting worse because of just the technology itself. But George Lucas turned me on to these high-def cameras. And he's always 10, 20 years ahead of everybody. So I thought, he's Obi-Wan. I'm following him. I'm not going to wait 10 years to figure this out. I'm going to go buy two cameras, hot rod them, you know, figure out how to give them a really neat look and go shoot with them. And it's just a revelation. I mean, you can shoot so quickly. You can be so creative. And then the finished image looks like what it was on the set. Very vibrant colors. Especially I like to use a lot of Latin colors. Very childlike colors. Very, very poppy. And it's the look I was going for.
How does the technology, the high-def technology, change the actual way you go about shooting the scenes?
Amazingly, and we're just because we've gotten used to it, you don't realize how much you'll dislike film until something better comes along. When you're shooting a movie, you're literally shooting blind, and because you don't see what you did till the next day when you get dailies back, when you get to actually see the film. Because you're on the set, you have a really bad monitor, you can't judge color, lighting, performance at all. And you wait till it's almost like being a painter painting in the dark, and you have to wait till the next day to see, I wonder if I used the right color. I wonder if I even hit the canvas. And with high definition, you're seeing the best picture on the set. What you're going to see at the premiere is actually already on the set while you're doing it. And that's not a luxury. It's actually a revelation, because when you're shooting a film, you never really feel like you're getting what you want. Ask any director, they'll tell you the finished movie is 40 to 60% of the vision they had. Well, because they were shooting blind. Now, I call this movie making with the lights on. You can really see what you're doing. You know when you got a performance. You know when you got it right. You know when you've put the flag in the day's work. And it changes your attitude completely. Instead of leaving the day wondering, did I even get it? Was I even close? Now you leave. Every day's Christmas on the set because the actors come over and they look at the monitor and they go, oh my God, we nailed that. Or we can do even much better than that. Let's make this or let's try that. And it elevates the art form in a way that when you see Spy Kids 2, it came out much better than it has any right to be for being a number two, because we were seeing what we were doing as we were doing it, and we really felt we were making the best movie possible.
Now, when you made your first film, El Mariachi, You made it on this really nothing budget, $7,000,
right.
and half of it was money you made by hiring yourself out for medical research.
Yeah. I was from a family of 10. I couldn't go borrow money from them. I had to sell my body to science. It was just such a... And people kept saying, wow, $7,000, that's so cheap. It's cheap. When you're from a family of 10, that's like all the money in the world. You know, I had to be so careful. All the money just went to buying film. Film was so expensive. That's what I really love about digital. Is that you could literally, I could really go make that same movie now for $5.
But was there a weird period early then in your career after El Mariachi was such a hit and attracted attention of Columbia and other Hollywood studios, and they started to woo you? Did they just throw money at you for hotels and restaurants and expense accounts in Hollywood?
It's not that they throw money. That's just really the business has built itself into, not from Texas. So it was very strange. I was very broke. But they, you know, part of the budgets that they have, and that's why studios have a lot of overhead, is when you bring someone who's considered a talent up, you, they put you in a real nice hotel. They you know, you get what's called a per diem, which is a daily expense account. And I was so poor, and from a family of 10, I was thinking, wow, this is a really great hotel I'm staying in. Could I just have the money instead that you're paying, and I'll go check into a smaller hotel. In fact, I'll go sleep in my office because it's really a nice office. It's got a shower and everything. So they said, well, no one's ever asked that before. So they gave me the money that they would normally spend on a nice hotel. They just let me take it as a per diem check, and I put that away, and I was able to put my brother through school and buy a new car, and I just slept in my office for a year. When you come from a family of 10, the survival instinct never goes away. But, you know, in Hollywood, they don't think anything twice of that. It's like, oh, yeah, you're coming out. We'll fly you up first class. We'll put you in a nice hotel. And I'm like, yeah, I don't really need any of that. It's really all about the work, you know.
Now, the critics called El Mariachi a quasi-spaghetti Western. And Desperado was a kind of English language version of El Mariachi. And you're filming now, or you're finishing now, the third in this series of Westerns. It's due out next year. And you also made a horror comedy written by and starring Quentin Tarantino called From Dusk Till Dawn. What's the connection between these shoot 'em up films and blood and gore and sweet, you know, G-rated spy kids family films? And the only thing that's obvious to me is that they're all funny and they're all fantasies.
They're all funny and comedic. Yeah, they're all fantasies. I'm in a fantasy filmmaking. What happened was before Mariachi came out, all I did was family comedies because, again, I was from such a big family. I would be at home when I was 12 making these little action movies. And all I had around me were my little brothers and sisters to star in them. So I made them the action stars. And they would always win contests. So I thought, wow, that's kind of a winning combination. Have kids that are really younger than you would expect doing action and comedy. And audiences of all ages loved it. So I really thought that would be my big movie. And when I had to make my first film for the Spanish video market, they only wanted an action film. So I made El Mariachi. But even that I couldn't take very seriously. So I made him a guitar player who becomes a hitman. And then Columbia wanted an action movie. So I said, well, let's do Desperado, which again is still kind of comical. And if you look at it, it's very fantastical. It's a made-up Mexico. It's guys shooting missiles out of their guitar cases. It really makes very little sense. But I had a good time as a cartoonist making it. And then when they offered me From Dusk Till Dawn, that's even a bigger cartoon of a movie. Very comical. Again, a lot of gadgets and a lot of just imagination overdrive when what's supposed to be a horror movie. You know, I knew every day, I got to do something horrific because that's the audience, but I couldn't help but be very kind of cartoony about it. And I was really just getting experience to do my Spy Kids movie because I knew that was going to be the big one. I was really just learning effects, learning how to make a movie myself in that arena so that I could make it a very personalized movie like I had done with Mariachi. Really stripped down the process so that I would be free to create whatever I wanted. And I was really just building up to do Spy Kids.
Well, you know, I couldn't sleep one night and I turned on the TV at about 2 a.m. And next thing I know, I'm seeing these half-naked screaming vampire women attacking bikers, and there's green goo flying everywhere, and there's buckets of blood, and people are hitting each other with lopped-off body parts. And I'm thinking, who left the TV on the X-rated sci-fi channel? And then I realize, wow, isn't that George Clooney? And there's Juliette Lewis, and there's Harvey Keitel is in this movie. Good God, this is supposed to be a real movie.
It's so funny. Quentin's biggest thrill was the fact that he was hoping someone would watch it exactly the way you did. You know, his only regret was that they give that away when the movie comes out, that it's two movies in one. But he said the way someone should see it is they should just be watching it on cable, watching this very Desperate Hours type serious, you know, movie. And then suddenly you turn the page and it's this wacky vampire film. And you're wondering, what did I just drink? What happened? What's going on? And it was actually George Clooney's first movie. He was still on ER at that time, and I really thought he could be a big star. And I gave him his first, you know, big break.
So when you make that kind of horror gore fest, do things get out of hand? Does someone on the crew say, look, I can make blood spurt 20 feet or eyeballs pop out 20 feet? So you just let them?
It's kind of a fun job in a way. It's really harder to make a movie like that than something that I'm more inclined to do, like a Spy Kids type movie. You still have to be creative. I mean, I'd walk on the set, and, you know, I'm not a morning guy, and you always have to shoot in the morning. So I got on the set, and I'm thinking, okay, here we go. We're going to do another day. What are we doing today? Oh, well, at this point in the script, it says we have to pull Tom Savini's head off and kick it around the room. Oh, okay, well, that sounds like fun. Let's do that. And it is kind of creative and fun in a different way, because you know it's for a very limited audience. It's for the horror audience. So you gotta kind of come up with, how am I going to make a horror movie when I'm not a horror guy? And so it is a challenge. It is. I'm much more comfortable making these Spy Kid movies. And what's funny is, just because the other movies came out first, you think it's odd that I'm making a family film, when really everyone in my family thought it was odd I was making those other films. So it was completely backwards. And if you actually go back and watch Dusk Till Dawn and Desperado, you really see the Spy Kids in all those movies.
Well, we have a clip from Dusk Till Dawn. And in this scene, George Clooney he plays this biker criminal who's dragged some hostages, played by Juliet Lewis and Harvey Keitel, to a biker bar, which turns out to be a haven for creatures of the undead. And Clooney and everyone else are all just now coming to grips with this strange turn of events.
Does anybody know what's going on here?
I know what's going on. We got a bunch of vampires out there trying to get in here and suck our blood. And that's it, plain and simple. And I don't want to hear anything about, I don't believe in vampires. Because I don't believe in vampires. What I believe in my own two eyes, and what I saw, is vampires. Now, do we all agree that what we are dealing with is vampires?
Yes.
You too, preacher?
I don't believe in vampires, but I believe in what I saw.
Good for you. All right, now that we all agree that we're dealing with vampires, what do we know about vampires? Crosses hurt vampires. Do we have a cross?
In the motorhome.
In other words, no.
Wait a second. I mean, just look around. We got crosses all over the place. All you gotta do is put two sticks together. You got a cross.
Yeah, he's right. Peter Cushing does that all the time.
Okay, I'll buy that. So we got crosses covered. What else?
Wooden stakes in the heart. Been working pretty good so far.
And garlic. Sunlight. Holy water. I'm not sure. Doesn't silver have something to do with vampires?
That's werewolves.
I know silver bullets are werewolves, but I'm sure silver has something to do with vampires.
Well, does anybody have any silver? Okay, then who cares?
Has anybody here read a real book about vampires, or are we just remembering what some movie said? I mean, a real book.
You mean like a Time Life book?
I take it the answer is no.
A clip from, I guess, Robert Rodriguez's 1996 mock horror road movie From Dusk Till Dawn. So how did you even get away with making a movie that was literally two movies in one? First, this very serious, dark, Pulp Fiction-like road movie, which turns into a vampire fest.
This is the great thing about Hollywood, is that nobody wanted to make this movie. Quentin had written, this is one of the first scripts Quentin wrote. And everyone said, oh my God, it's two movies in one. It makes absolutely no sense. You'll never get this movie made. And then he made Pulp Fiction. And suddenly everyone wanted to make this movie. There was a huge bidding war for it, because they go, oh my God, it's great. It's two movies in one. It's suddenly its disadvantage became its advantage. And it gave us creative freedom to do whatever we wanted, because Quentin and I both, we make movies very inexpensively. And that's the trick. If you're getting a chance to make your movie, it would make almost sense to try to get as much money as you can from a studio to make the best movie, right? Wrong. The more money you get, the more they're all over you, questioning your every decision. You almost like become the painter who keeps getting the paintbrush pulled out of his hand, and they say, use red, not yellow. And you're like, why? I don't know. Because you're spending so much money, we want to make sure you do it right. And then it becomes wrong. So our trick has always been, use very little money, be very creative, and then you have the creative freedom to do whatever you want. So that's why I've always kept my budgets lower, so I can make a family film without having to have people question your move. And the studios support that, because if you make the movie inexpensively, no matter what, it'll be profitable. Dusk Till Dawn was very profitable because it cost us $10 million. But we had the freedom to just do something that could become a cult movie.
Robert Rodriguez recorded last summer. His latest film, Spy Kids 2, is out on video and DVD.